From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly look at California politics. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, sitting across the console from me.
Here so early
the,
this
in
morning.
In the studio. It is early on a Thursday morning. I was in early. I forced you to come in early.
But here I am, bright-eyed.
You're awake.
Bright-eyed and bushy-browed.
So this is our last podcast.
Ever?
For March. Is it really, like, can I not do that 2 months in a row? Is that I've done that joke now twice.
I don't know. Is that an NPR layoff joke?
Oh, that's actually just a journalism layoff joke, I'm afraid. No, you and I are still here talking about politics. And so we got a few things to talk about today. So let's talk real campaign politics first. All of these budget-related ballot measures.
Is there a campaign? Because no one seems to be it seems to be a secret. I haven't heard a whole lot about it.
And therein lies part of what we've got to talk about. Okay, so a new poll is out today on Thursday. You'll be hearing the podcast on Friday, folks. But poll is out on Thursday from the Public Policy Institute of California, their survey of the six budget-related ballot measures. And thud.
Yes.
Thud.
Turd sandwich.
You can say that on a podcast. That's entirely appropriate. That's that just shows how chatty we are.
But is it accurate?
I don't know.
Let's go to the numbers, John.
All right, so let's thank you. I printed it out before we came in so we would sound semi-smart. So Prop 1A, the spending cap, rainy day fund proposal, 39 yes, 46 no. That's not so hot. We'll come back and talk about these in detail, but 39 yes, 46 no. Prop 1B, the money for education, the extra money for public education, 44 yes, 41 no. That's like a one of the high water marks, not quite.
When the schools are at 44%, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah. Prop 1C, the lottery borrowing plan, 37 yes, 50 no.
That sound you hear is a hole in your budget.
1D. This is like good. A little commentary after each one. 1D, the transfer of money from early childhood programs, the tobacco tax money, 48 yes, 36 no. That is the most supported of the controversial ones.
And does, I can't remember, 48%, if you get 48%, does the measure pass or fail?
Well, there's still some undecideds there, Mr. York.
Okay.
1E, the transfer, temporary transfer of mental health money for the budget, 47 yes, 37 no. And the motherhood vote.
Yes.
Because it's like, do you support motherhood? Prop 1F, the no let pay raises for lawmakers during budget deficit years, 81 yes. 13 no.
The motherhood thing could actually be complicated if you think about Prop 8 and gay adoption. And
okay, you really are taking us down that path. Hey, you know, you came in loaded for
I'm a rabble rouser.
Yeah, good. All right, so well, there's no way to notwithstanding the political team behind the governor and the and his allies' plan, notwithstanding their attempts to do so. I don't think there are too many ways to spin this as good news for them.
How about, well, not as good news, but how about this? They have not even started their campaign. They haven't started the paid media campaign, and we've seen...
And we're 8 weeks out.
...the governor get involved in the last minute with, I believe it was Proposition 60, someone correct me, the Three Strikes Initiative,
63, because 64 was the open primary-ish thing that year. Prop 63.
The numbers changed dramatically over time. I mean, unprecedented, but the numbers.
No, it wasn't 63.
No, Prop 63 was mental health. Right?
Yeah, sorry.
It was on that ballot. 60. I don't know. Jeff Randall, give us a call. But
you
anyway,
all know what one we're talking about. It was 2004. It was the proposal to modify Three Strikes to kind of make it work better, according to its supporters. Opponents said it would water it down. Governor got involved at the last minute to fight back the changes, and it lost.
Right, and it was dramatically ahead a week out, 2 weeks out, right, and ended up losing.
Okay. So now the point you were trying to make, we got lost.
Is that there's hope, perhaps. I mean, there's at least from a communications spin perspective, there's hope.
As I was writing this morning on blogging about, I mean, the two things, I mean, it seems like maybe if there's any silver lining, and I think it's a thin silver lining, let's be you know, honest about it.
Maybe
if there's any silver lining, it's that people think the budget is a huge problem and that there are still some undecided voters.
Yeah.
I mean, and right. those are the only two silver linings I see. People are dialed into the state's budget problems. They understand that they're problems, and there's still some people who haven't made up their mind. But that's a thin silver lining.
It is, and it underscores, I think, something fundamental about ballot measure campaigns that, you know, it's much more difficult to pass something than it is to get something defeated. Look, we haven't seen any – I think we saw a little trickle of money come into on the no side from the mental health advocates. But there's been no paid – no campaign yet. There's – you know, and these things are going down. You look at – compare this to the field poll numbers when the measures were first announced. And they seem to be heading, as they euphemistically say in our business, these are headed in the wrong direction, right? So, you know, it's going to be a difficult campaign. I don't know what the strategists are thinking in terms of messaging, but as we've talked about before, even the messaging for this campaign is muddied, and it's these are tough waters to navigate, and it's going to be an uphill climb, I think. Well, how many cliches can I get into one?
How many? Go. Well, you know, and I mean. One of the things, I mean, this is one of the caveats about polling. One, it's a snapshot in time. Two, the PPIC poll, while a very good poll in terms of its methodology, I don't think anybody's ever really questioned PPIC's practices. They're reading the title of these ballot measures to voters, and voters are having to make a decision: I support it, I don't support it, based on the title, which in itself is a humorous kind of thing because the legislature wrote the titles
right.
to these, you know, ostensibly to make them sound as good as possible, and even the titles themselves aren't selling the measures. So there could be people, when they learn more about it, maybe some numbers will flip. But again, 8 weeks out, you know, there. I think there's some of the early spin was to, you know, I think is to suggest that. You know, the governor, I think yesterday on Wednesday, was asked a little bit about some of this. And we knew the polling, but the poll was embargoed. And it's one of those kind of weird things where you can't really report about it. But everybody in the political world knows
like,
about it.
Like exit polls on election night where everybody knows what's going to happen.
Everybody knows, except for 2004, right, when they were all
or 2000.
Wrong. Or 2000. But the governor made some comment in an event about a different issue. Where he said something like, you know, oh, we've done this before. We've, you know, they counted us out with redistricting. They counted us out with that, the this or that, the infrastructure bonds he pointed back to. And I'm not sure of the time frame he was referring to. But again, we're 8 weeks out. I mean, there's not a lot of time to sell things that are already that the voters are already skeptical about.
Yeah, although, you know, 8 weeks out from a traditional campaign is Labor Day. And that's kind of when you see that's sort of thought of as the official beginning of a campaign, you know, paid media campaign. So just to play devil's advocate a little bit.
Even though you declared them dead a moment ago, now you're going to play devil's advocate.
That was off air, wasn't it?
No. We were recording.
I didn't declare them dead. I said that their pulse seemed to be a bit
weak.
Weak. Yes. I think a lot of it is going to hinge on the paid media campaign. And the fundamental question is if they're successful in selling this package of initiatives to voters as something that is needed to the burrito approach to help the budget situation. I mean, voters are not happy right now, and I think they're skeptical. And any sort of scheme that involves, you know, potentially tax increases and borrowing. I mean, we saw perhaps. Arguably, the most important measure short term is 1C, the lottery.
Yeah, we've talked about that. I mean, really, 1A and 1C, I think, are really the story of this election.
And 1C would, you know, it's seemingly the most innocuous in many ways. It borrows money from a program that nobody has an emotional investment in, the state lottery, and
kind
uses
of.
It. Yeah, kind of. They
kind
don't
of
have
an emotional connection. I mean, people pass the lottery because they thought it would help education.
Right.
And anybody who thinks it's, you know, and so they don't, they're already frustrated with the lottery.
But it's not like mental health advocates or, you know, early childhood development
advocates.
And
it's at 50% no.
It's the lowest, and it's the lowest.
It hit the 50% mark that I think really is really dangerous
for
them.
So I think that if you're, if you're a proponent of these measures and you're looking at it, you say, hey, look, you've got to hope that part of the reason these measures are struggling is because people are confused about them. They don't know what they do. And once we get our clear, concise messaging campaign up and running and tell people what these are really about, then the numbers will flip.
Yeah. Well, something else out of this poll, too, because we've talked about this. You've talked about it. You've written about it, I don't know, a few weeks ago. I've lost track of time. Which is the whole idea of who sells these issues and what role can the governor play versus some coalition of concerned Californians play. The poll numbers show the governor's job approval ratings not good. As a matter of fact, I think one of the lowest, if not the lowest, that they have found among likely voters, 33% or something,
right.
32% among all respondents. I haven't got, of course, that number in front of me. I have everything else in front of me. But that goes to show, you know, kind of the difficulty, I think, in a low point of the governor's approval rating for the governor to be the guy out there as the vote for it because I say it's a good idea.
Right. And also, in this election environment, I mean, the other big question is the turnout model and the universe. I mean, who's going to show up to vote? A lot of the people who are going to show up to vote traditionally in low turnout special elections are more conservative, older voters. And a lot of the places where the governor is arguably having the greatest problems right now are among the sort of the more conservative voters. And the arguments against a lot of these ballot measures are coming from conservatives. So it weakens his value as a salesman for these measures.
What do you think about something that kind of surfaced, I think, in the last day when reporters were talking to Mark Baldessari, who is the pollster at PPIC, who also the president of the Public Policy Institute. But I know my colleague at KQED who talked to him, he said this, and I think he said it to one of the newspaper reporters I was reading about it, which is that if you look at the approval ratings of Californians in Washington, congressional delegation, they are much higher than the legislature and the governor, and that if you could get California's congressional delegation to say these are a good idea to help campaign for them or something, maybe that would help. But I don't think and I think he's speaking maybe kind of academically looking at who could. But I don't see do you see any sense that Nancy Pelosi or Barbara Boxer or Dianne Feinstein is going to get on the stump for these?
Well, Barbara Boxer, if of those three, you know, Barbara Boxer was out here a couple of months ago talking talking about the state budget situation, and the only thing, I mean, the thing that Boxer has in common, unlike Feinstein and Pelosi, is that Boxer has a contested election coming up in a couple of years. Maybe she will, you know, have some interest in sort of engaging, but I don't see it happen. I mean, they've got their hands full in D.C. There's plenty going on there, which I guess we'll be talking about shortly. D.C. stimulus dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Segway alert.
Yeah, but we're not there yet.
Where's the segway siren?
That's a segway preview.
Yes.
We're not quite there yet.
It's a tease. We call that a tease in the radio business, John.
Okay. Thank you, learned broadcast expert. Okay, but there's no sign that there's going to be some joining of the fight by those folks. I'm not saying it won't happen.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, could I see campaign commercials with Dianne Feinstein in them? Yeah. I mean, I could see it.
That has happened in the past.
Yeah. But, you know, is that going to change I don't know. I mean, I think it's really it could be part of a larger sales pitch. I don't think Feinstein is the silver bullet for the numbers that we saw this week.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the groups of people who are kind of lining up, not lining up, because we've talked for the last couple of podcasts that we're kind of waiting for the shoe to drop, so to speak, or a shoe. Was that the shoe?
That was my shoe.
Okay.
It was my Khrushchev shoe on the counter table.
Not a shoe being thrown at someone, which is a different.
No, that was a
okay.
Bush, Iraq thing.
We've been talking about, like, you know, where will all the different big power players in California politics line up on these measures, or when will they make it known? We're still kind of waiting, I think, for some of it, but it's getting more and more clear. So let's see if we can kind of go through it quickly. The California Teachers Association, which everybody wants to know how they're really going to act in this election because they're very politically powerful. They've got a lot of money. They formally voted to endorse
all of them.
All of the measures. And they put a couple of million dollars into a campaign account in favor of Prop 1B, which is the one that they really care the most about,
which is the
money for schools.
Of course, it doesn't go into effect unless 1A passes, but that's another.
Right. There was a little bit of transition of money that a couple of reporters noticed, you know, that some of us had noticed between the committee led by the governor and his allies for 1A and the whole burrito and the CTA. But I don't really think that's real. That's not serious money for what you have to do for a statewide campaign. Anyway, they formally endorse them, but what they do about campaigning and money and messaging remains to be seen.
Yeah, well, they have their own political consultant, Gail Kaufman. They're running a separate campaign. I mean, that campaign will be coordinated, you know, Gail and Rick Clawson, who's sort of the lead on the burrito campaign, have worked on ballot initiative campaigns in the past, you know.
I guess my point is that, yes, they formally endorsed it, but formally endorsing something versus getting out and really trying to sell it, like the CTA trying to sell 1A, may be a different issue. We'll see. I mean, who knows?
We will. And, you know, and it could be that that will be helpful if CTA sends out, you know, mail to their membership. And I imagine in these ads somewhere, mark my words, 8 weeks out, my bold prediction is that in a campaign commercial coming to you soon, you will see a teacher.
No.
And a firefighter.
No.
Perhaps a police officer.
No.
Maybe even some sort of medical, even though the California Nurses Association has opposed the measures, you may see someone in scrubs or, you know,
Anthony
some sort
York,
of,
that is brilliant.
You
should be working in politics.
I confess I used a crystal ball.
All right. So, right. We might see a group of people who Californians like,
Lions,
for lack of a better term, who don't seem to be politicians.
Lions and tigers and bears.
Oh, my. Okay, so we've talked about the CTA quickly. Let's just not belabor the point here. Wow.
Belabor. We said labor.
We've been going a long time on this podcast. We've got to get off the subject.
Okay.
Okay, right. There's been some other labor movements. It's a kind of an odd one that we were talking about a moment ago, right?
We said labor movement. Never mind. Which one? Are you talking about SEIU?
AFSCME.
Oh, AFSCME.
The American Federation of State
Municipal... SFC, Federation of Municipal, State, and County
Workers, Employees.
Employees.
Okay. Sorry, folks. Sorry, AFSCME folks. Sorry, we're just.
This is what you get when you get a morning podcast.
It's a morning podcast. The national AFSCME is opposed to the ballot measures. Local AFSCME is in favor.
Right.
Which is a bit of an odd. I don't know if that's a wash or who knows. Who knows who's got money? Who knows who's. Getting out the word to their members means something, but that happened. And then also, and then quickly, because we do have to get to federal stimulus.
Okay.
And not to diminish their role, but there is a formal opposition campaign that was officially announced this week. Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, Ted Costa, who wrote the 2003 recall of Gray Davis, and Peter Foy, Ventura County Supervisor, who... some people think could be a dark horse candidate for the Republican gubernatorial.
He could be a vote siphoner
nomination. Now, none of those people, or even that coalition, even purports to have a lot of money.
No,
but as you said, you may not have to have a lot of money in this election, depending on who turns out, how you get the message to them, and a short campaign.
Right. I think the bigger question still. Is the money. It's, you know, AFSCME is opposed, but are they going to put up money to oppose it? The service employees who I think I erroneously reported last week that they were going to be voting on it yesterday-ish.
You are now retracting that erroneous report.
It did not happen.
So stated.
Put it that way.
What about the big money?
Well, that's just it. I mean, Meg Whitman and Steve Poizner.
I mean, you've got two Republican candidates for governor who have mega bucks personally and who both formally oppose, especially Prop 1A. And so who knows? I mean, could they open their wallet? That would be a game changer. That would be the equivalent of Daryl Issa giving his money to the recall, and the recall happened because Daryl Issa funded it.
Well, maybe when Jeff Randall calls us about the three strikes thing, we can ask him about Meg Whitman.
You are really sending out a message to one political consultant. All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. But, I mean, we are getting some clarity. And, again, we've got some time for this election. But this poll's got a lot of folks talking, you know, whether it matches with internal polling or not. But anyway.
I think it's in the ballpark.
You think it's in the ballpark. All right. Well, let's talk about stimulus money. Let's get stimulated on a different subject. See? There was a transition.
There you go.
See, I'm the pro. You're the newspaper guy.
Whatever.
I'm the broadcaster.
We're all looking for new trades, though, in the newspaper racket.
So. Right, exactly. You're looking for somewhere to land. Federal stimulus money. There was a lot of discussion. There continues to be a lot of discussion at the state capitol about how California will spend the money. Of course, we're still trying to calculate the total amount. And we had some movement this week about efforts towards transparency and efforts toward kind of creating a stimulus czar, for lack of a better term.
Or czarina.
Or czarina. But you wrote about this today. This is your subject.
It's just illustrating the point, you know, it's chaos out there in a lot of ways. The federal government is struggling to push this money out to states and local governments and to get the money spent quickly. And yet the guidelines are slow in coming from the federal government. You know, Joe Biden is out there threatening enforcement over over federal dollars that, you know, ensuring that stimulus dollars are spent wisely. And yet, you know, there are no official guidelines for a lot of this money on how it is going to be spent. So the Schwarzenegger administration has been working on this for months, but they've sort of formalized their process or in the process of formalizing their process this week. Inside the administration, they're setting up a task force to sort of track the money. And they have they've had a lot of different working groups that have been involved with
based on subject areas, policy areas.
You know, the money isn't coming in one lump sum. It's coming in, you know, there's some money available in healthcare and some in education. And that's the easy stuff to track. Most of that's going directly through the states. But then there are energy grants and broadband programs and homeland security. I mean, there's little pots of money all over the place. And that's what they're sort of struggling to get their hands around, figure out everything that's available and how the state can maximize their dollars.
And so we're expecting the announcement of a stimulus czar or
czarina.
Or czarina. We're trying to be gender neutral since this really isn't formalized yet or
not formally formalized.
Yeah.
No.
Official.
Though there are some clues in this week's Capital Weekly.
Yes, you can pick up your copy around the Capitol or online.
CapitalWeekly.net.
CapitalWeekly.net. But we're expecting the announcement of a stimulus czar. I think it'll still be interesting to see how the administration sets up its oversight and then what role that is versus the legislature because, I mean, you know, that is to be determined. I mean, the legislature is setting up its own kinds of accountability and control over this. The Assembly made some moves toward that this week as well through that accountability committee chaired by Assemblymember Hector De La Torre.
Yeah, and I spoke last week with the chair of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, Allison Huber, who's wondering if there's a role for her committee and the state auditor to play in monitoring these dollars. And, I think there are going to be some power struggles. We wrote about a little one this week in Capital Weekly involving some water money. But there are going to be some institutional power struggles, and that's going to slow the process down. It's going to be, it's going to be interesting to watch how the seemingly contradictory demands to get the money spent quickly, and yet to ensure that there's oversight. And I think there's a lot of political jockeying going on and more than a little confusion.
And given that transparency is the buzzword of 2009 with this, you know, the president put it out there from the federal level and it's trickled on down to the state level of this transparency notion. There's a website that the governor's administration has put up, which is recovery.ca.gov, which up until just a few days ago had been very thin with really anything other than saying we're getting money. Yeah.
Right.
And it's now got a spreadsheet that is still a little thin, but I think somewhat shows what we were talking about here, which it's broken down by policy areas, health, transportation, or health infrastructure, environment, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a list of the kinds of areas that we're getting money, how much money we think we're getting, and then who's in charge of it. And what I find fascinating is how many subject areas still say to be determined on who's in charge of it and to be determined on how much money we get. I mean, this is really a work in progress.
Well, there's one example that's in the story we wrote this week. For a lot of the education money, there's a deadline of March 31st to get the education states to get their applications in for education money. The Schwarzenegger administration officials who I spoke to this week said that the guidelines for those applications and for those dollars are not expected to be formalized until March 30th.
24 hours.
A day before. So they have a pretty good idea of what's in there, and they have their paperwork pre-filled out, but they don't know exactly. They haven't read it all. So it's just a good example of some of the tight deadlines that and some of the bureaucratic chaos that surrounds some all these billions and billions of dollars.
And not to belabor the point, but given past history in California, where you wouldn't really say that local, regional, state, legislative, chief executives all work hand in hand and everything.
No,
there have been lots of disagreements over all kinds of policy issues. We're not a state where that happens all the time, and where people are like that. And so, again, getting back to who's in charge of what money and who's going to demand X, Y, or Z,
right.
I think. In addition to the budget struggles, the fiscal challenges of the state, that's going to be one of the other big stories of 2009 is watching who is in charge of what on this money.
Yeah, and given what we just talked about, the state doesn't have the best track record of spending its money wisely either. I mean, we're faced with another $8 to $15 billion hole in the budget in June. And I think somehow handing this money in a lump sum over to the states and with trusting that state officials and local officials are going to spend it wisely is, that's a leap of faith from the federal government. God bless them.
I have now folded all of my notes.
I raise.
No, not that kind of fold. Oh. I've now folded them across as though I'm done with them, which I think means we should wrap up.
Pollster origami time.
Yeah, exactly. You can take the poll and you can make all kinds of things out of it. Well, let's see. We'll be watching. Who knows what we'll be watching next week? Same stuff.
Same stuff. Reruns. Same stuff. Reruns of news.
Yeah, right. Please tune back in for the exact same topics, but in a slightly different format. No, we'll try to find some other things. I mean, you know, there's always angling.
There's always something.
There's always angling out there. Keeps us in business barely. That'll do it. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony is already out of his chair. Almost. We'll see you next time.